They didn't set a mic up. No, they didn't. We don't need a mic, do we?
No.
All right, Rabosai, we'd like to begin. The subject of this afternoon's session, which is an extremely important one, as all of you know that most of our Jewish students are attending universities these days, and the 52% intermarriage rate is based largely on the people that they do meet on the campus, is halachic issues confronting religious guidance personnel on the college campus. And if many of you don't know, the question can simply raise from who is a Jew, like everywhere, to the question of what happens if the Gay Alliance comes to the chaplain on campus saying they would like Hillel and or the Jewish group on campus to sponsor. If you don't know, the question can simply raise from who is a Jew, like everywhere, to the question of what happens if the Gay Alliance comes to the chaplain on campus saying they would like Hillel and or the Jewish group on campus to sponsor a Shabbos dealing with human sexuality, the Jewish perspective, co-sponsored by the Gay Alliance. How does one deal with that? We are fortunate having two distinguished colleagues who work on the campus discuss this issue. Our first speaker will be Rabbi Tzvi Flom, who is the Mashgiach Ruchni at Stern College. I'm sure all of you know him and his expertise. And Rabbi Charles Scheer, who is the Jewish chaplain at Columbia University. Each of the rabbis will have a half hour, followed by questions from the floor, and I'm sure they will enlighten all of us as to how important and the wide range of questions that every college chaplain faces and has.
What I'd like to accomplish is essentially three things. One, I hope to do a bit of Limud Torah. This is not a formal shiur. We were asked to give presentations, but I'd like to share a number of mikorot that I have found helpful to me in my own particular work. But in addition to that, what I'd like to do is try to give you a sense of the atmosphere at many campuses today. When I meet rabbis, particularly in shuls, that is congregational rabbis, in many different contexts, and I say this in all due respect to those gathered here today, I find that there sometimes is a tremendous gap between the perception of what university life is really like and what the reality is. There are certain assumptions that we make about particularly universities where students are living in the dormitory, what the life is like there, and those assumptions don't necessarily concur with the reality. So that through the topic that I'm going to present, I'd like to offer, if you will, a bit of a portrait of some universities in the country today. There are about 450 Hillels throughout the country. And therefore, my remarks obviously cannot touch all of them. But rather, they might typify the larger campuses, particularly those that are in large urban centers. Not necessarily those, however, that are in the East Coast area. We can discuss that in detail later on if you'd like, the differences between them. I'd like to present three different types of shilas. One is, if you will, your garden variety shila. Orthodox students come to me as their rabbi and ask for psak in a particular matter. The second area is where those who are not necessarily Orthodox, in most instances not, an organization that's working for Soviet Jewry has a question that they feel has halakhic implications, a Christian group is discussing a particular topic and they would like my guidance on it, or the university turns to me from some particular point of view. In these instances, although the question might relate to behavior, and I'll define some of them, I am not necessarily a posek. I am a consultant. Those who are presenting the question to me are not duty-bound to follow my decision. The university may accept what I say regarding security arrangements as they impose upon Shabbat, or they may not. The student groups themselves, let me emphasize this, are not necessarily responsible to follow my particular psak. If a number of women want to put together a women's tefillah group, I might outline what I consider to be the appropriate approaches were one to conduct that type of a service. But if they so choose, they can simply elect another authority or none at all, reserve a room on the campus, and have their service. It is not my show. I'm not the rav in the sense that I can impose my standards in that particular context on all those who inquire. I'm simply a consultant. The third area, and this is the most challenging one, is what I would call areas of public policy. When I sit down together with my student community, and the structure that I work in we call the Jewish Student Union, we're officially not part of the Hillel, and we try to develop a position that we might adopt as a community on areas of religious observance. We recognize at the outset, all of us who do campus work, that we are a pluralistic community, that we represent, in my case, Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, and about 20 other different projects and Jewish communities, all of them trying to somehow come together and operate with a sense of cohesion. This is, in a sense, the most challenging, and from my point of view, the most interesting area when I have a Shiloh, because here I have a voice, an important voice, a voice that can be determinative because my students are consulting with me to develop our policies, but I really don't have a veto. And it's a different category, and it means that if indeed I'm able to be effective as a more, indeed convincing by the strength of the argument, then I will be able to sway the community, because here they're involving me in the process itself. It's a context which I think most shul rabbis are not familiar with, and it's a very awkward one, and it has put me in positions that I have many, many times found exceedingly uncomfortable, and in many instances even wish to avoid, to be perfectly candid. Now, what I'd like to do to describe these three types of cases is, so to speak, go through somewhat of the calendar year. And I'm going to focus really on Shilas. I'm not going to be quite as broad as Norman suggested in all of my remarks. There are numerous intellectual challenges which come to the rabbi, and that is what I certainly enjoy. But I was asked to deal with halakhic issues, or issues that relate to behavior, so I'm focusing more on those rather than ideological questions or intellectual challenges. Each year begins with the same series of Shilas. Every single year, first year students come to the campus, it's freshman orientation, as it's called. They normally come in nowadays Thursday before Shabbos. I have no lead time to prepare them for much at all what's going to be taking place on the campus. Those who are a little more sensitive to their own needs of Shmirat Shabbat and Kashrut, for example, seek me out and ask good questions. Very, very few do that, to my dismay. My children all went to YU, but I wonder what my kids would have done had they gone to another university. I'm always waiting for students to come to ask all kind of detailed questions, whether it has to do with hashkacha, my personal standards, what are the proceedings of Bat Shabbos. Very, very few students ask questions. I'll come back to that. The first question is, in order to get into the dormitory on Shabbos, you have to show your ID card. And many kids only ask that Shiloh Friday night after davening. And they say, how am I supposed to get back into my room? I'm supposed to show the ID, right? In one of my campuses in Barnard, there is an Erev around it. And Columbia side, there isn't. So the kids ask me in shul, what am I supposed to do? It's a Maaseh Shehaya. It happens every single year when our kids are graduating yeshivas. And you should, just to give you a sense, on my campus, every day for Mincha, we have anywhere between 60 to 90 kids. So that's every single day. So if you assume I have, say, 70, 80 religious kids coming in every single year, multiply that by four, together with other observant students who are not from yeshivot and graduate students, it's a large Orthodox congregation. Friday night we have about 250, 300 students, standing room only every single Friday night. We are the largest in the country, but there are many who certainly have 100, 150 people, what have you, every Shabbos. That description notwithstanding, those types of questions students really don't ask before. And the PSAC, very, very clearly, since I have worked out these issues with the university security department, we have tried to get lists that will have all the students who are observant, you know, listing on that, and every single dormitory. So when they come in, they give their name and their ID number. But then, of course, you have students who come in who are guests, who are not on the list. And the ID list is never kept up in time. Doesn't always work so well. And therefore, the psak that Rav Moshe gave for travelers to the Soviet Union is the ones that I advise the students to follow. When you have to carry a visa in the Soviet Union, otherwise, indeed, you can be expelled. So Rav Moshe Paskin, you take the visa, you put some type of clip devices, and you make another clip and put it inside your garment. So I have a hole puncher in my office, and those students who get the word come in, and we punch their ID card in four corners, and they wear it throughout the entire Shabbat, and all they have to do is present themselves. The only problem is my women, because that means they have to wear the same outfit the entire Shabbos. I've suggested they take scarves or what have you. During the winter, we're okay with that, because then you wear a coat. But I've used all different types of dreidel, trying to figure out what in the world can they wear that will be something which obviously has to be done before Shabbat and can't be removed. So that's simply that type of a psak, which Rav Moshe developed for travelers to the Soviet Union, is one that I say to the students. I have a point that I'm going to make in a moment, a more general one. When it comes to questions of kashrut, I am overwhelmed by such shilas. But they are very disappointing shilas, for two reasons. Number one, the notion of koch dehetera adif, of course, does not exist. That is to say, they are relieved when I can asser anything, right? And they're suspect when I tell them they're not even asking a shaila. Because when I talk about a shaila, I mean, well, you have to have some shikul adas, whether there are issues you have to deal with. But when it's simply a question of application, the basic principles, then that's not a shaila, that's informational, that's processing processing something which should be obvious to anyone. The two shilas that I get every year, dealing with carrying on campus security arrangements, issues that we as adults would anticipate when we go to a hotel. We know to ask now, if you're walking downstairs, can you get outside those steps to the first floor lobby, or will it be locked, right? And what kind of a key? Will it be one of these electrical keys? In one of my dorms, they have one of those little cards, you see. So we had to have an engineer take a look to see whether it's electrical or mechanical. These questions that we know as adults, the students really don't know to anticipate nor how to ask. The first point I want to make is that what amazes me and frightens me and indeed dismays me is that, seeing as I do such a wealth of Orthodox kids coming to my campus, I am appalled at their ignorance about the needs of being Shomer Shabbat in public areas and their lack of education on the basic principles of Kashrut. Ben Yomo, Yatza, let it bo. I mean, knowing how to ask a Rav a Shaila. My first point is that I would encourage you in your shuls. You don't have to be a campus rabbi to give a seminar on how to be Shomer Halacha at the university. And I would encourage you to give practical sessions for your juniors in high schools, junior and seniors in high schools, to prepare them to think out these questions so that before they come to the campus, they are sensitive to, number one, what are the problems they're going to have with Shmirat Shabbat, and number two, to be able to think that when your mother and father are no longer around to explain to you what the symbol, I mean, Ad Kedei Kach, what symbol, Kashrut symbols are acceptable, It is amazing how many kids who come from yeshivot really don't know some of the symbols, not only from in another city, but even in the New York area. And when students will come and ask such questions, it means that one of the messages I want to leave with you is the need to prepare our high school kids in yeshivot and in shuls to be able to encounter those type of very simple and obvious questions. Next question I get, going along the calendar year. Once we get them into the campus and they realize the problems in getting into the different dormitories, what have you, I'm not going to go into those. I have nothing, no chiddush really to say there, to the details of how one can, all the little dreidelach of using a Gentile staff, what have you, to get into the dormitory. There's no point to take our time on that. The next question that I normally get has to do with Shabbat and Chagim. And it comes in two forms. We began in my campus on Thursday, and Sunday night was Rosh Hashanah, which meant that before the students had a chance to breathe, they had week after week of Chagim. And the questions came, can I sit in my classes without taking notes on Yantif? And the corollary question, am I allowed to study on Shabbos, my secular courses? And I'm amazed again that these issues hadn't been dealt with before. That is, what are some of the sources on it? And I want to make it clear, I want to just learn through some of the materials that I found helpful, some of them Mekorot. I'm talking about undergraduates. With graduates, particularly, let's say, medical students, for example, where there's a broader literature, Yaakov Demdin has a whole tshuva, it's quoting the Truma Sedeshin, differences when you're observing someone who's a mumcha, where there's no maisa, so forth and so on. I'm talking about the undergraduate student, and no matter what field it might be. And here some of the mikorot are quite fascinating. Shulchan Aruch in Shin Zion, I want to read you the text inside. Asel umod b'shabbat v'yom tov zula b'divrei Torah v'afilu b'sifrei chachmot asur. Very clear. Afilu b'sifrei chachmot asur. However, sifrei chachmot is to be defined. Source for that is the Rambam. Interestingly, the Rambam and the Perush and the Mishnah. Some interesting differences between the Ibn Tibbon translation and Rav Kapach. Not overwhelming, but interesting ones. Rav Kapach translates the Arabic, it's in Gemara Shabbat. In the Mishnah Torah, interestingly, the Rambam doesn't really have it. Rav Kapach in his notes tries to suggest that the Rambam might think otherwise. I wasn't overly convinced, and so I'm not going to even cite it, but you can look it up and see. It's in Perek HaShoel as the Rambam in the Mishnah. Kol zudat sifrei nivuah upeirushehem asur likroto lo b'shabbat v'lo b'yom tov. Kol zulat sifrei hanivuah upeirushehem. Right? Anything except that literature. It's interesting. He starts with sifrei nivuah upeirushehem. Right? Asur likroto lo b'shabbat v'lo b'yom tov. Afilu hayabo divrei chochma umada. Right? And later on, the Rambam says, "V'nemar o she'asur she'asur asot chafetzach b'yom kodshi elim kein hayabo divrei mitzvah she'az yiyeh chafetzay shemayim kegon shiduch limud tinokot chokma o ketav o melacha o hitaskut b'chol elu then it's mitzvah then it's mutar." That's the whole sugya. If it's iskem chafetzay shemayim, we're allowed to deal with it. Certain exceptions, and it's interesting what he even puts in that list, but basically the Rambam is the source to prohibit even Sifrei Chochma. Shulchan Aruch continues, V'yesh mi shematir, that's the Rashba, it's a Tshuva, the Ramban also, and the basic context in the Gemara, in the Gemara Shabbat, is Ashtarei Hedyotot. And there are two basic reasons. We'll come back to them later. One has to do with L'dar B'deval, right? Nimtso Cheftzecha B'yom Kodshi, inappropriate activity for today, to be involved in Shtarot, right? So one should not look at such documents. And as you know, then the question even deals with newspapers, particularly the business section, what have you. Is it even Muksa, therefore? The other reason for the Yisr is Shema Yechakim, if you're going to write. Right? So those are the two approaches to the Yisr of dealing with such type of Shtarot. Either it'll lead to a Yisr Deraita, you'll write down, you want to patch up your bills, make some notations, etc. Or it's simply inappropriate for the Ruach Hayom. That only applies to the Shtarot themselves. But Sifrei Chochmah, the Rashba says, it doesn't apply. Yesh Mishamati. What do we hold lehalacha? So one might normally assume, well, they're different approaches. Looking at the Mishnah Brura, quotes Achronim, Levush in particular, I'll cite it inside in a moment. It says, Ara Nitiyah is to be Mata. We hold like the Mishmi Shemata, and the Mishnah comes out. Yerushamayim should not really involve oneself in such literature. Primary level. What are the other sources that we have, later treatments in this particular topic? So this would mean if a student wants to come in and wants to read his or her homework on Shabbat, right? Clearly there's a machloket amongst the Rishonim. And however, it seems that we are matir. Well, let's go through some other mekorot. I want to deal with two in particular. So David Tzvi Hoffman had a shaila, a bit different in context. His question was, as he formulates it, I want to read it inside, in Malamed Lehoil, it's Nun Chet. Kitanim Shaholchim Lebeit HaSefer. Now he uses the word kitanim, but I think if you look at the tshuva in the end, his answer, although is for the I'm assuming meaning minors, not just children, but it's clear, I think, that his concepts he would apply to Gedolim as well too. Because he's going to broaden the issue, I think, in the fullest context. Hishayla. Kitanim Shaholchim Lebeit HaSefer HaNikra Gymnasium Lilmod sham chokhmot hatzrichot bizmanenu leparnasa v'holchim sham gam biyom ha-shabbat. And then they have to bring their books, so they're allowed to should the father be moches, so forth and so on. So he deals with most of the tshuva deals with the issue of hotzoah. But the beginning part he discusses our very topic. Chila adaber im mutar l'talmidei gymnasium l'lech l'gymnasium b'shabbat. If I seem a little bit unclear or somewhat hesitant, I was up till late, in a few hours, Reverend Sharpton is speaking at my campus tonight. And I was up till very wee hours in the morning with a committee of the students trying to develop policy, meeting with the security. I had a day which one does not also have your tzeit for my father and my remarks to L'Zecha Lishmato. So both emotionally and what I've been doing rabbinically, it's a rather complicated time today. So if I'm a little bit hesitant, I apologize for that. Sharpton will say his Torah, I'll say mine, and never the twain shall meet, Lahavdil. So it's a bit of a complicated time today for me. Tchila adaber im mutar l'talmidei gymnasium l'lech l'gymnasium b'shabbat. Hine. B'siman Shin Zayin, where I quoted, maybe b'zeh shtei deyot, v'dak ha-machmirim v'osrim l'lmod b'sifchachmot b'shabbat. Hevi b'stam, so he goes to the sources. Hine, shurat ha-din haya l'psok ya-osrim. That seems to be the thrust of the din. Ach ha-levush, katav, d'no ha-gin ki-matirin. V'chein mashma b'dar ki-moshe. Nearly benidon didan gam haosri mode the ikatzat mitzvah. Even those aser here, they would say there's a shtickle obligation, as you will even see later on. There's some fascinating lines here. That's why I want to read it inside. The adua, he says, the bezman hazeh ef shar lesocher lehasig parnasato im lo lamat chila lishonot the chokhmot the batei sefer hanikrim gymnasium. That's very essential for today's realities. V'im yitbatel ha-talmid b'limudo b'yom ha-shabbat, azai lo yavin gam ma shelomed b'chol. Because the Malamed's not going to go over what he taught yesterday on Shabbos. So therefore he says, v'agadei ze ha-talmidim ha-hem yelchu la-achor v'lo lifanim. So it's pedagogically necessary for them to be there, to learn those skills and know that that piece of information which is needed to be a functioning human being in society, particularly in terms of parnasa. V'im tamar, so let's get a private tutor and we will avoid the entire problem. So he says, Ba'avadatenu harabim, most of us are aniyim, and not able to do it, so forth and so on. So it's not realistic in terms of public policy to require Jewish families to employ a tutor to make up for what they would have learned on Shabbos. Oda niyomer, even if we have enough money, he says, it's important that those kids who are more particular about mitzvot should be in the class. Because if they're not in the class, the other kids who are there, when they don't have the frum ones watching them, will then take out a pencil, and they'll take some notes, and ultimately will do some yisurim. The Alkain, he says, Yoter sheyirbu talmidei b'nei Yisrael she'ein kodvin b'shabbat, Yoter v'yoter techazakna yideihem, v'ish et achiv ya'azoru l're'el yomar chazak. Umutav sheya'aseh ha'ashir davar shehu pachot me'isur azuta, im yatzil al yidei zeh bar Yisrael chavero me'isur araba. Right? Fascinating idea. Shtickel Isser, to be able to be matzil someone from a greater Isser. Upok chazi mai da'omid debar, look what they're really doing. Shekvarna gukama v'kama yureim, v'm bedinat askenaz lishloch b'nehem lebate gymnasium b'shabbat. V'altabi adam, they've been doing this already for quite a while. Nasu yureim et Hashem, marbim hamakdishim shem shemayim v'hem l'Israel Hashem u'tifer. However, he says at the end, Ach bevada yesh li zaher sheyelchu habanim lahashkama, and the yekesh hashkama minyan means a real hashkama minyan, right? 6:30 in the morning, not like my hashkama 8:00 in Riverdale. Laman lo yivatlu mikriyat haTorah b'Shabbat. I think from the context one can see that it's not just a question of the ketanim. At least that's my perception of what he says here. That's Malamed Lahoel. I read this in other Mikorot. I sat down and began to think, as all of us must do. You have a shaila. First thing one does is you do the research. Right? You ask those of the authorities to get information. And then you try to weigh various different options. And then one has to consider what is appropriate. And looking through other sources, other Achronim in particular, they quoted a Meiri, one which I remember having learned before, but when I looked it up, I was very struck by it once again. And you might be quite familiar with it. It's Meiri Alatar and Kuf Yud Chet in Shabbat. And I read through the Meiri where they're discussing a variety of things, amongst them the notion of Onik Shabbat. Mitzvah Onik Shabbat Gedolah Ad Ma'od goes through a number of materials, ultimately quotes Yerushalmi, very famous Yerushalmi, the Meme Ango, Mar Amar B'Sheina, Mar Amar B'Talmud Torah. Right? V'lo Plige, Kan B'Talmid, Kan B'Bal Habayit. And my Rabotai, he says, understood that it meant that the Talmid who's involved in Torah, that's Onik for him. He sits and learns about Gemara. And the Baal Batim sleep. V'ani Omer Hefech HaDvarim, says the Meiri. She'talmid she'shoneh kol yimei ha'shavua mikayem b'shabbat oneg she'na. The Rav was learning all week. He needs to chop a bissel. He needs to rest his mind, he says. Shelo yehei sichlo lo'eh yoter midai. It's appropriate to have an alternative endeavor b'yom kodshi to make it distinctive. That's the oneg, to do what you're normally not engaged in. Av abal habayit she'mitasei kol yimot ha'chol v'asakav. Ra'oi lo lehitaseik ma'at b'Shabbat, he's generous, ma'at, v'talmud Torah derech onek. And he has other sources. It's very beautiful. Now what are my students doing all during the week? All right, we have a base mentorship and go there and find kids learning from the morning till night. Looking at the sources, what is a chumrah, yirei shemayim, the Mishnah Berurah's language, one who is Yirei Shemayim should not study on Shabbat, even though we are Matir, says the Levush. But if one goes back and takes a look at the concerns of Onik Shabbat, right, and particularly the Meiri's derech of doing what is unusual for us to do, it became clear to me that a preferred psak would be to inform my students not to study on Shabbat and not to go to the classroom and to listen and not write down on a second day of Yontif, but those who are a little more informed present the question. And that's what I have said. And I'll tell you why. Because if one goes back to the initial concern about Shtarei HaDyotot, what were the two concerns? One basically is owning Shabbat. I'm identifying that with Mimso Chetzachar. I know one can divide them up. What is the ruach of the day? What is the character of Yom Kodshi going to be like for the student at the university? If it's going to be distinctive, then it must be a day that's going to be different. And the other concern was maybe someone will do an Issa D'oraita, actually write notes. V'kein haya. Those students who came to me kind of already on the way out of observance said, you know, once I sat in class and I took a little notes, you know, it was the second day of a yontif, and it was a really, I was not doing well, and you know, a bolt of lightning didn't come in a shemayim. And that kind of became the petach for a diminishing observance. The two concerns of Shtarei HaDyotot, although they might not normally apply in certain contexts, dafka at the university are appropriate. And therefore, what I have advised students, reasonably forcefully, is that they not study at all on Shabbat. And under no circumstance should they go on the second day of Yontif. And indeed, once I made that particular position known, of course, they stopped asking me that shot. How does one apply it? Well, each one will judge. But that's been the position I have adopted. And I adopt that personally myself. I'm very, very particular about what I will study on Shabbos. I will not prepare a Gemara shiur that I'm teaching on Shabbos. I'll learn something that is mine. Actually, there's one particular tshuva of a Sfardi, Tzpichi Bedvash. Actually, it's Aser to be Me'ayim, Be'iyun on Shabbos, if a Talmid Chacham cannot really do that on Shabbos, based upon these sources. Now, Gedalia Felder, who collects a lot of this material, goes through. It's a very fascinating discussion. But I'm very particular. I will not read anything secular except for things about nature. I'm very much involved in environmental stuff and beautiful things about the Baruch Shalom's world. That I'll read on Shabbos. Anything else I really will not touch. Going through the calendar year, the next occasion when I have Shilas, or at least one Shilas that I had this year, was on Purim. And it was an interesting shaila. Had nothing to do with Purim, it had to do with a mechitza. We have at Columbia two different Purim celebrations. We have Reformed, Conservative, Orthodox, and Megillah readings, consistent with most campuses. You pick and choose where you want to go for that. And then afterwards, I have insisted that people shall have the right to pick and choose where they can go to celebrate. So we have a Purim Chagiga, as the name implies. And then there's a dance party, which has disco music. And I said, at least if they play Bach and Beethoven and Schubert, it would be a little hetter for it. But a regular party, right? So you have a choice. You can go to which minion you want, and then you go to which party you want. Right? This is the university. So my yeshiva kids came to me this year, and they said, you know, in the Purim Chagiga, since you can buy a ticket and go to both dances, that's how we have it. One ticket gets you into either, and you realize, you know, you can be Sharma Nagia at the disco dance as well, right? So you have, you can go and make tons of alachasanas, and everything is kosher. So my frum kids came to me this year, and they said, we want to have a mechitza in the Chagiga. Everybody comes to both parties, and it reaches the point where it gets to be inappropriate. And we feel there should be a mechitza. So I thought it over and thought it over. And these are my kids, right? I mean, these are, you know, They're looking for me to support their position. If Rabbi Shear, we happen to have an Orthodox rabbi, if he doesn't support our position, although they know I'm a progressive type, but they still have to ask me the shilas, right? Where else are they going to go? It's not so simple. I wasn't quite sure whether the issue really warranted it, candidly. I think it had a lot to do with kind of an image issue, and I have the dubious distinction in my campus of kind of being somewhat of the benchmark in the Orthodox scene at the university. So if it starts at Columbia, the next will happen certainly at Penn. This is the route. They might kick it around at Harvard a little bit. I could go through the routes that it would follow. So my students sometimes, you know, we have this one-upmanship on Frumkeit. I don't say that just purely in jest. Unfortunately, that it really is a reality. I thought about it a lot. And before I said, let me think about it. And then some of my other students heard about it. Both those Orthodox Yeshiva high school graduates who would not want to see a mechitza there, and also some of the non-Orthodox students. And they said, look, you know, if one of the reasons we have these alternatives is to provide something that will be attractive to the broader community, then once you put a mechitza there, the separate sex dancing alone for some students is an impossibility. And if I cannot get someone to come to the Orthodox minyan daily or on Shabbos, someone I'm working with who's becoming more observant, at least I can get them to the Purim Chagiga. After all, it is a party. I don't have to call it the Chagiga. I say, come to the Purim party, and I'll grab the guy into the circle and he'll dance with me, or my wife will take the woman to the woman's circle, what have you. And that's not an easy accomplishment to do for someone who has never seen separate sex dancing. And they don't know any of the melodies that are being sung, what have you. And everybody seems to know what's going on, except for me, says this possible Baal Tshuva. So to put a mechitza down the line makes that particular process an even more complicated one. The source that I always think about in these instances really is the Rosh, although the Shach cites it, L'Halacha, and other Achronim do as well, and I think you're familiar with it. But it's a beautiful phrase, and I want to read it inside. The Sugya is the Sugya Psachim Makim Shenagu, the Mishnah. And it's the classical case. Those of us who, when we were initially married, remember the major question, the first time we were invited to the in-laws, right, for Seder. And they have a different minhag than yours. That's where the tension really begins, right? Makim Shenagu, you're going to someone, Erev Pesach, and the din is that you don't do malacha Erev Chag, and some places did malacha, some did not. So what do? You follow your own makom, makom shenichnas hasham, yatzim hasham, so forth and so on. And then the Mishnah says, v'al yishenem mipnei ha-machloket. We don't make a shino in your minhag because of machloket. And listen what the Rosh says. This is at the end of his discussion of that entire sugya. Ha'ela, he says, afilo ha'olech mimakom shemachmirin l'makom shemekilin, v'afilo b'dato lachzor, right? He's piling up all the weight. Yesh linho kekule hamakom shehalach l'sham, va'al yachmir keminhag mekomo mipnei hamachlokit, v'davar shenikar bo shinui minhag. If it's a public gesture, and it will produce dissension, you do not change. Even if all the sources, the supports are really there. Data lachzor, so forth and so on. And later on he says, and this is the language which I always remember, Mashma, ha lo efshar below machloket, hayalo lasod melacha imahem, de gadol hashalom, v'yesh lo laavor al minhag mikomo, kevan deletbe isura deraita, elashenahagu bo isur lahachmir alehem. So what I did with my students, this is that third category of the shalas that I was talking about. I sat down with my student board that has people from all different backgrounds, and I said, listen, let's learn through some of the sources. So we learned through the Mishnah, I went through a little bit of the Sugya, and I took out the Rosh, and we read it. And I said, on the one hand, assuming there are no Yisurim Deraita here, which I think there are not, here is something which is a Chumrah, which may have a concern, may have a legitimate argument supporting it. But if in the end it is one that has produced, as it did, this became, friends, last year probably the hottest issue in my community. The Purim Mechitza became a classical case of the Orthodox community trying to impose its will on everyone, because it was a party that was sponsored by the Jewish office for everyone in two different flavors. It wasn't the Orthodox Dominion sponsoring it, but it was the Jewish community sponsoring. And what ultimately I suggested is we follow this particular notion and not put up the Mechitza. So that we had. So I'm presenting here two particular contexts. When it came to the studying on Shabbat, where Yirei Shemayim is supposed to, Yirei Shemayim should abstain from studying Sifrei Chochmah on Shabbat, there I felt, although it pinches the students, I said, there we should follow the Machmir point of view. Because the underlying thrust of the sources is to protect Shabbat, and I could not see any way to legitimate it. There I felt the Yesh Machmir were appropriate. Here in this particular instance, where the cost was to disaffect a sector of my community, observant one, and disallow us to reach out, here I felt the Yesh Machmir would be inappropriate. Other shaylos, co-ed dormitories, what have you. Students come to the campus, and again, it's one of these things that students and their parents, I mean, I'm amazed by it, just are completely naive. No one really thinks that I'm sending my child to the university. None of our front parents say, where's my, I had two parents that spoke to me this year about these type of questions, that's it. Where's my son or daughter going to live? Virtually, most dormitories are co-ed. That means that indeed you have single rooms in most instances. On most floors you have a men's bathroom and a woman's bathroom. So you end up with basically an apartment structure. But some have only co-ed bathrooms. And that's not unusual. The stalls are separate. I'm not going to go into graphic details. But, all right. So I used to think, so students came to me and said, what are we supposed to do? In terms of Yichud, I do not see any shilas there. You have a private room, what have you. If you gave me 5 minutes. In terms of Yichud, I mean, there's not an issue there. They have their own private rooms, etc. The issue is more of one of tzniut. I've said to the students, clearly the co-ed bathroom is in Maladaber. We've been able to move students off of floors on that basis. The university has been trained for some of these type of issues. On the other hand, the single-sex floors don't remain to be a panacea either. What it simply means is that comes Friday night, when you have, say all women or all men in the dormitory, so my students say, because the Shabbos Kodesh, and these girls, your fellow, are bringing in their boyfriends to stay over with them on the weekend. So advising a young woman to be in a single-sex floor is not the Yeshua either. It simply means that on Friday night, when you're trying to sing Zmiros, your next-door neighbors are having a wild party. And the matter gets even more complicated for our graduate students sometimes, because the university will not allow, at least in my campus, any assignment on the base of religious orientation. They will not, if you ask for someone who is Jewish, they will not respect that. If you ask for someone who is black, who is Pakistani, what have you. So what began to occur is then that students were moving into suites, graduate students, where you have people who don't keep kosher. The only person who's shomer mitzvot, and everybody else is not kosher. And I was able to convince the university to allow the student at least to live together with other people who are kosher. And then they said, okay, we'll try to move them around. And then it ended up that you have a number of people living in a room, some men and some women, in one particular room. But the university said, listen, Rabbi, you asked they should all keep kosher. So here you have them. Right? It's not an easy situation. Again, with Yichud issues, I mean, the Ramah has one man and three women. I've said to students, if they're three and three, then at least it works out to be a three men and three women, again, all with their own separate rooms, then at least the Chalkat Makoke, for example, cites that as being a number that might be sufficient. And so therefore, some of these issues are asked and some of them are being dealt with. Just one word, I think the future questions that are going to be, this is really what I wanted to deal with. I had more things on the co-ed dorms, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about the gay issue. What I see is the coming questions really are the issues of the relationship between gay students and the Jewish community. This is going to become kind of the Shiloh of the future. Whereas prior to this day and age, the major questions we had dealt with women's issues. What I now begin to see, and I had such an instance already this last year, is the integration of students who are gay and who are Jewish within the Jewish community.
Thank you, Rabbi Scheer. Now, Rabbi Flom, and I'm sure...
School I'm going to be discussing now, and the shaylos that relate to this school are much different than what was discussed by Rabbi Scheer. And I think that is one of the reasons both of us were asked to address you this afternoon, to give different perspectives of different types of situations our college youth are confronting when they go to college. It's not going to be as startling as Rabbi Scheer was mentioning, because it'd be his specific problems. We have no co-ed dorms in Stern. At least it's not supposed to be co-ed.
Not yet.
It will not be. School I'm going to be discussing now, and the shaylos that relate to this school are much different than what was discussed by Rabbi Scheer. And I think that is one of the reasons both of us were asked to address you this afternoon, to give different perspectives of different types of situations our college youth are confronting when they go to college. It's not going to be as startling as Rabbi Scheer was mentioning, because it'd be his specific problems. We have no co-ed dorms in Stern. At least it's not supposed to be co-ed.
Not yet.
It will not be. And quite obviously those dilemmas that you have to face, which I'm not mekana you, quite obviously we don't have. However, even when it comes to dealing with Kodesh and not with Chol, there are always shaylas that pop up, and I'd like to now give you a very quick overview in the time I have allotted to me. The various issues that not only confront me as being the Mashiach of Chinuyin Stern, but I would think confront every Rav who is in the marketplace today dealing with Balabatim on an ongoing basis, and specifically those people involved with collegiate youth who have the problems I'm going to be describing to you at this point in time. One thing I want to start off as a very interesting Ha'ara is that in all the years I've been in college, and I've been there for over 12 years already, I've noticed that our college has one major, major phenomenon that doesn't exist in the rest of the world. We do not have any women lib problems on campus itself. And quite obviously, people would ask me, how is that possible? You have girls from all over the world. It's literally the United Nations. So we don't have, I think, one country in the world where the Jews living that we don't have some type of representative on campus. How is it possible, with people coming from different types of backgrounds, different types of educational formats, different types of hashkafot, how is it possible that there isn't a problem when it comes to women's lib? There has never been a request to have a women's minyan on campus with all the hidurim mentioned by Rabbi Shear. And I believe the basic answer to this is a hashkafas hamakam that I want to first share with you as my first ta'ara, and based upon this hashkafas hamakam, build the rest of my share this afternoon. There is a very, very beautiful pshat given by Rav Yitzchak Aramah, the famous biblical exegete of the 1400s. He was basically a contemporary of the Barbanel, in which he deals with biblical narrative we'll be dealing with in a couple of weeks from now in Parshas Vayetzeh, in the famous confrontation between Rachel and Yaakov by the fact she was unfortunately childless. If you look in the narrative, the pasuk says very beautifully, and unfortunately you feel a heart fade when you read it, but the kind of Rachel b'achosa, but obviously she saw that her sister was having children, she became very jealous. And the pasuk tells us, if you don't give me a child, I'm going to die. So you can understand the pathos, the emotion she possessed. His answer to her was, not that I love you and I have compassion for you and don't worry, Hashem will help, but he was fiercely angry with Achar Enav. And all the Mefarshim here asked the question, if she was the most beloved wife, how is it possible when she's crying to him, help me, he should answer with anger and not with compassion? The famous question everybody asks. But Yitzchak Aramah, who lived in the 1400s, comes up with a beautiful pshat, which I think has to be mentioned. He says, if you go back to the beginning of the Chumash and Bereishis, we find that the first woman was given two distinct names. One name is mentioned in the beginning, where the physical bria takes place. Adam says, Zeisa pam etzem yatzamai basim ibsari, lezos yikari isha kim ishul kachazos. She was called the isha, in order to teach her that, and when Adam HaRishon gave names, it was not only names for the sake of names, but they, according to the Mefarshim, indicated an essence of what he perceived that specific entity is all about. When he called an Isha, according to Rav Yitzchak Aramah, that designated to her the idea that the same way an Ish has a specific purpose in this world, be Yishiva Olam, to basically take Hashem's world and create it on a physical, spiritual plane, she was called Isha, to basically tell her the same mission your husband has. Isha has the same exact mission as being the Eza Kenegdo. Yisha Va'olam is something that has to be equally shared by men and women. The second functional role, which was mentioned later on, a couple of psukim later on, Vayikra Adam Shem Ishta Chava, Ki Hi Haisa Em Kol Chai. She was called a Chava to connote a unique role that she possesses, that men cannot possess, and that is of motherhood. And what Rav Yitzchak Aram tells us is that when Adam HaRishon therefore gave his wife these two names, he was teaching her a dual functional role that she as a woman has, which men do not have. We're an ish, but no way, no matter how much we're involved in natural childbirth, we are not a woman when it comes to bearing the child, giving birth to the child, and bringing up the child. When Rachel came to Yaakov and said to her that if you don't give me a child, Mesa Anochi, what Rav Yitzchak Aram perceived in her specific statement was that the only purpose of my bringing this world is to be a chava. She was kofer in her mission of being an isha, of sharing another mission, and that is being an isha with her husband, an ish, sharing in the spiritual and physical creativity of this world. She's been kofer in that part of Hashem's bria. And therefore, since he perceived in that a lack of understanding of who you are and what you are, as if to say, if I don't have a child, I'm totally worthless, he therefore reacted as if to say, you're being kaifin HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the kishronos you possess when it comes to your intellectual talents, when it comes to your abilities to be creative in this world. And that's why he reacted with Achar Anaf rather than with compassion. To bring home to her, don't be kofin the matanus tovus Hashem has given to you as being a woman in this world, and being Isha, and being comparative to your ish, to your mate. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is because when it comes to Stern College, I would say one of the major reasons we do not have a problem is because we accentuate to the young ladies that come to our school that besides being a beautiful Jewish mother, which we want you to be, that you have another role in this world, and that is being an isha, to be basically a comparison to your husband, to be similar to your husband, and that is that besides being a mother, you have a tafkid in this world before motherhood, during motherhood, after motherhood, to make contributions to society, whatever profession you want to go into, whatever types of activities you want to do outside when it comes to dealing with society at large. You have a spiritual and physical mission in this world that is equally important as an isha as that of being a chava. And once you portray that to women, and you mean it with sincerity, and there's no question our staff means it with sincerity, and you are machshir of who they are and what they are in society, the problem of women's lip falls by the wayside. Rav Moshe Feinstein once had a famous tshuva where they asked him the question, how do you deal with women's liberation? And he says the same exact thing in his specific tshuva, that when you accentuate to women on an honest, simplistic level, that kedoshim to you was mentioned and only to men but to the women, and that matan tera Hashem went to the women first and then to the men to ask them if you want to makabel the tera. When you bring these facts to the fore and you basically explain to them that not every Israeli is mechuyav in all mitzvos, if I'm Israeli, I can't be a kohen, I can't be a levi. And the fact you can't do certain mitzvahs does not preclude you from kedushas Israel, does not make you something as an oddball. If you explain to them these yesodos and you do it with an earnest and sincere fashion, women's liberation and what they're trying to portray on this world will not have any seeds whatsoever. And I can say, tell you honestly, that it's during college and all the years I've been there, and with the diverse type of student body we have, there's some members in the audience who have taught in Stern College. We do not have on our campus, because of what we give as an equality to the women, when it comes to understanding Hashkafas Yahadus, any problems of women's liberation. So Baruch Hashem, from that dimension, I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening in the present or in the future. I want to mention halacha lamaser, that it sounds like a nice chain of drush over here, but there's a halacha lamaser dimension from this specific Maimar Chazal as well. But once you say a woman has a major functional role when it comes to dealing with this world, and specifically when it comes to shaping a Yiddish mishpacha, one of the great gedolim in Europe, Rav Zalman Suratskin, was once asked a question in his tekufa when they started developing the Beis Yaakov movement and such, if a father has limited financial resources, and quite obviously he has a boy and girl, who does he send to teach them Torah when it comes to chinuch? And quite obviously, al pi pashtus, the person might say, that by boy, there's a chiyuv deraisa, l'matas b'nechem, v'loy b'nefsechem. He has a chiyuv at Talmud Torah, but a girl does not, necessarily, point to at least the Beis Halevi's interpretation of that Maimon Chazal. So you would say, al pi pashtus, if you talk about chinuch, the boy should have the kedima over the boy. Comes along Rav Saratskin and he says that since we see the importance of Noshim in Klal Yisrael, and specifically if Matan Torah, Hashem spoke to the Beis Yaakov before he spoke to Bnei Yisrael, so if that's the case, when it comes to the development of a Yiddish Shtub, if you have a suffix of who's going to be the final mentor, the one to bring it to its final culmination of success, and you have to make a Bereira, it's better to give a Kedima to a woman over a man when it comes to Chinuch. Now, quite obviously, this Gadol said in his early 1900s, what was interesting to me is that he was one of the Rosh Yeshivas in Europe. He was surely not from the YU Hashkafa, he was from a different Vada Yeshivas. But nevertheless, the perception he had and the sensitivity he had to the importance of women when it comes to the development of Yiddishkeit is something that is so important that not only did he say, Api Hashkafa, Api Halacha, if you're asking a Kedima of who descends for Chinuch to have Yeshiva education, women should be given a Kedima over men. Once again, once you tell this to women, when it comes to a perception of what was said, their whole question of why women are discriminated against falls by the wayside. The specific marker for this, if you want to look it up, is Rav Zalman Suratskin's Tshuvas, the Maznayim Linishpot, Chelek Aleph, Tshuva Mem Beis. Let me start with my major topic for this afternoon. In Stern College, one of the major things we do when it comes to trying to show women who they are and what they are is expose them to unique formats of Talmud Torah that perhaps they've never experienced before. Over the last couple of years, especially because of what's happening on the college campuses, many, many girls come from what we call classical Beis Yaakov schools, who normally in the past were given a Psach Halacha by whoever wanted to give that Psach Halacha, that it's better to go to a non-Jewish college and go to a seminary night rather than go to Yeshiva University, which that cloud of Psach I have a lot of problems with, but because of what's happened in the campuses where you have co-ed dorms and other types of phenomenon, for some reason, they decided, and I'm saying that with cheek and tongue, to let them come to Yeshiva University. And I'm saying it with cheek and tongue. Now, quite obviously, they're coming as a bid'evit to our school. Now, they're coming to a bid'evit to our school, there's a major problem, because you have to understand, our school is a conglomeration of many girls who've been given a modern Jewish education their entire life, who've been exposed up until now to Shas, and Poskim, and to Rambams, and Gemaras, and everything else. And you have a from Beis Yaakov girl who we have in the hundreds now, coming to our campus, who's never seen a Rambam, let alone a Gemara text, let alone a Mishnah, And they've been taught the entire life that it's also Issa deraisa for a girl to learn Gemara, to look at a black Gemara, forget about this, that's Epicurus's. And they know the Maimon Chazal. One Maimon Chazal from Gemara they do know. Rebbe Lezer's Maimon Kamalabi Bita Bita Terra Kikim Lam Netifus. That Maimon Chazal they were exposed to. But everything else is basically Usser. So you take them into a classroom, and the obvious question they have is, you know, how in the world can you teach us this? You're giving them a syllabus. They have Maimon Kamas from all over. Gemara is replete with Gemara's, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. How can you teach us this? Is against the Rambam who paskins this Gemara in Masechta Seita, from Dacha. The Rambam paskins Chukos Talmud Teri this, Maimon Rebbe Lezer. Likewise, paskins this specific halacha. So, how in the world do we rationalize this and explain this to them, to get them involved and desire to want to learn this type of material? So, the answer that I give him is the classical answer, which was already espoused many, many years ago, at the end of the 1500s, by the Prisha, Yishul Falk, whose wife herself was a phenomenal Tamita Chachame, as is mentioned by her son in the Hadamah to the Tour. In which he says very basically that if you look at the Rambam's formulation of Rebbeleze's Maimer, it's very, very, very interesting. Rambam doesn't say, as the Rebbeleze's Maimer seems to indicate, that all women are prohibited, but the lashon that is mentioned by the Rambam very, very beautifully is that the rov nashim, that most women at his time at least, motzis is divrei Torah le divrei Havai le fi'aniyas daita. That he was talking about, this Maimer means most women who are in that specific generation, based upon their lack of perhaps formal education, if they would be taught Torah on the level of their male counterparts who were always given formal education, they might misinterpret it, misuse it. His diuk is that if a woman therefore shows that she's not part of the Rov HaNashim, that she's interested in learning and shows a desire to want to come to learn, and to come to Stern College you have to show an interest because there's no reason for you to be there, you're not being forced, it's not elementary school anymore. So once you show that you're part of those Yotzim and HaKlal, that basically are not under the specific proscription according to him, the Rambam's psak only dealt with the Rav Noshim. It didn't deal with the Miyat HaNoshim that basically show their own motivational drive to want to learn. And therefore, he paskin halach lamasa that when it comes to Noshim who therefore show an interest to want to learn, there is no Issa in the world whatsoever to teach them what they so desire, and there's no part of Torah that should be denied from them. This psak of the Prisha was later on codified by the Chida in his Chuvas and Yitzchak. And also, I want to mention to you that the Chida says is the basic proof of this is Beria. Beria was a Tamid Chama. She was able to have many discussions. The only way she was able to learn was by people teaching her. How did they violate this Maimon Chazal? So Chida says, since they saw that she was the Yetzim in HaKlal, they therefore taught her Kolatera Kula. If she was not the Yetzim in HaKlal, and they felt that Rebbeleze's Maimer was totally all incorporating all types of women, then Halach Lamas, they would never have the ability to do so. So therefore, he says, from here we see, a Maiserav, in this case, a Maiserav Bonut, that she basically speaking was a demonstration of the fact that halach lamas, if you're the Yotzim HaKlal, this permissibility is allowed. And you go through literature, you will find continuously that there were many Rabban Chashuvim that used to have shurim with their wives on a continual ongoing basis. Many Rebbetzins who used to give shurim from the other side of the Mechitzos to the Talmidim of the Yeshiva. There was one Sfadah Sherav who had a daughter who was such a Talmid Chama, she used to be in a tower. And the Talmidim used to be around the tower on the bottom of the floor and basically hear shurim of Kol HaTerakul, of Kol HaShas. So obviously the only permissibility that could have been lumped is the lumdis of this diuk in the Rambam, that it's not a klal that applies to everybody as the milsa psika, but it depends upon who you are, what you are. And honestly speaking, the girls who come to our school are very desirous of learning, they want to learn, and unquestionably I can tell you honestly that besides the actual shroom they have to go to, based upon the actual program, there are tens upon tens of shroom going on in the dormitory night, which they do but terrorists with shus in order to show their cheshit to want to learn. So you're talking about people who want to learn, and therefore the prescription, the specific prohibition mentioned by Rabbi Lezer, does not apply to them. However, Rabbi said there's a downside over here. And that is, we have a lot of girls who, Baruch Hashem, become Tamidos Chachamos. They're involved in learning Black Gemara by them. You can see them in the base Medrash tonight, preparing that Black Gemara like their male counterparts. But the downside over here, I find as Mashgiach Runi, is twofold. Number one, for some of them, not for all of them, for some of them they become, they feel, at least in their mind, they're the spiritually elite, a certain gasas haruach, basically a certain gaivas halev, that I'm better than everybody else, which unfortunately, even though they don't articulate it, they separate themselves from the rest of the student body as if, you know, they have nothing to do with anybody else. And the second problem I have found is when it comes to shiduchim. And I'm talking about not boys coming from Chafetz Chaim, or coming from Tells, or coming from Lakewood, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about our own, why you tell me them uptown. If you tell him a girl has learned Gemara and is in that type of shir, as frum as she might be, they look upon her as being a spiritual aberration. And you can't imagine how many times I come to Morpheus to write to me that I thought by learning this, I become very smart and I become very firm and get involved in learning. When it comes to Shidduchim, I look upon as being some type of spiritual aberration. So my answer, my first error I wanted to make this afternoon, is that I think that there are two things that are required to rectify this, and we as a Rabbanu, I think collectively have to do this. Number one, I think it's, on one hand, we have to keep on accentuating the fact if you want to learn, there are no limits. However, I think at the same point in time, we have to, number one, educate the young ladies that when they are learning this type of material, they have to realize that they are no better than our Ima Saramenu. And this week's Pasha Shavua, Chazal tell us that even though when there were halacha conflicts between Avram and Sarah, it's about Tishma Bekela, which Rashi comments, that she was superior than Avram when it came to Ruach HaKadosh. Nevertheless, in the beginning of the Pasha, when the Malachim asked, where is Sarah? Ayei Sarah, hineba oyal, Rashi comes to Sunuahi. Which meant Sarah was a Chachama, but she knew how to hold her Chacham. She knew how to portray herself. As great as she was, when it came to the Derech HaTzniyah, she made sure she didn't try to outshadow her husband. Now, I think one of the parts of Chinuch that we have to do when it comes to being Mechanech HaTamidos, it's one thing to be a phenomenal Tamid Chachama, but don't try to outdo the boys that you're dating or outdo your husband. It's one thing to know, but don't try to basically show them up. And I think that's a part of the chin that we have to. In fact, I found him here. He says one of the problems of tiflus that he interprets that to mean is that a girl who knows so much will be, he says, kashkeshes kapama. She'll start ringing like a bell. She'll say so much, she'll scare people to run in the opposite direction. So the Meir, he already said, is the Lashon Shel Tiflus is the fear if she learns. This is going to be the result. And I'll tell you, Habayisa, from my own, where I'm sitting, with 700 girls in that school, I can tell you, honestly speaking, the Meir was not so far from the reality what I see in society today. The second thing I think that we have to do as mechanchen, as rabbanim, is basically mechanch boys, that they should realize there's nothing wrong for a girl learning Gemara if she wants to do so, according to halacha. At the same point in time, look upon Hamidah's Tevis and see if she's from, if she's observant, if she really means what she's doing, L'shem Shemayim, and then make the judgment. Don't say that she learns Gemara, she's Pasul and Treif, and therefore she should not be even considered as a Shidduch. I think we have to reorient our people to realize society is different, what people want to learn is different, and therefore you have to relate to the society and the people therein. I think this is part of our chinuch when it comes to being rabbanim. The second thing I want to mention, which is also a very interesting phenomenon, is that with Limud Torah, women become, hopefully, more observant, more daikonis when it comes to observance of mitzvahs. And you always have, as time goes on, what I call the classical stira between the hypothetical ideals and pragmatic reality. One classical example is one of the things that we teach our Talmidos since they're in college is that the mitzvah of tefillah, which for the Rambam is the mitzvah deraisa, for the Ramban, and most Rishon is the mitzvah derabanan, and there's a big machlokus when it comes to the chiv hamitzvah, when noshim, when they were given the chiv of tefillah, as the Mishnah says, Masech, this brachas, daf chafam ebeis, does this chiv of tefillah refer to the chiv of tefillah deraisa, which is the shittas harambam, as the Magen Avraham quotes it, or does the din of chiv tefillah even apply to the din derabanan, where she has to recite a formal shemona esrei? I want to mention a point to the Shittas HaRambam where he says the Chiyuv D'Oraisa, that doesn't just mean she goes in the morning and says Shalom Aleichem to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means, as the Rambam himself says, there is a specific tzura on the D'Oraisa level. Even though the Nusach is Midarabanan, but the actual tzura, what she has to say, she has to start off with the concept of saving Shevach HaShem. She has to have Bakashas HaRatzon in the middle. And she has to end up with the Hador. That tzura is a Mabeya D'Oraisa that has to be performed. How she says it, that's her prerogative. But that, even if you say the Chiyuv Tefillah D'Oraisa, and the nusach of the Rabbanan, that matbeya tefillah according to Rambam is ma'akev b'di'evet. Now, I want to mention that if we are teaching our Talmidus as we do, that most haposkim, which I mean the Mishneh Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Shulchan Aruch Rav, paskin like the Ramban against the Rambam. The women formally should recite two Shemon Esrei a day, specifically Shacharis and Mincha. The Aruch HaShulchan is one of the Yetzim Nekal who says even Mari should be included, that once the men were makabal kecheva, that even applies to women. But Mishneh Berurah, basically speaking, and the Shulchan Aruch Rav disagree with him vis-a-vis that. So we're teaching them, this is what you have to do. And you have to be careful, because Zmani had tefillah, I can tell you honestly, can go in the hallways. And you can see girls between class and class, trying to make in that Zman, to daven b'yechidus with a tmimus dekait, not with a gaivus alev, to try to make sure they daven b'zmano. So this we do in their undergraduate life. It's inevitable that once these young ladies get married, and they start bringing up mishpacha, I get the first telephone call, Rabbi, you told me I had to daven, and I want to daven with kavana. But Chaim Yankel and Rivkel are screaming in the background. The babies are here. I'm going crazy. My husband wants me to make him breakfast. And I have a major, major religious crisis. I was with Dr. Eckes for 4 years in Stern College of Davin every Shar Chasam Mincha without any hefsik whatsoever, even a Maghrib sometimes. And now all of a sudden I have a major religious crisis. I can't do it anymore because I have the children and my husband begging me to be involved with them, not with these types of activities. What do I do? So I point out to them that in basically resolving this crisis, they don't think you're the only one, but in actuality, there's a famous narrative, a famous story that goes back to the time of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim paskin halacha l'maaseh, that a woman has to daven a shachar simincha, but his son, Rav Aryeh Lev, records historically that during the upbringing of the Chafetz Chaim's children alone, he did not allow his wife to daven a formal shachar simincha. And he said the reason is because she's busy betipul banav. Now what does this mean? So later on, the Chazon Ish, to explain the psak given by the Chafetz Chaim, and that Ma'aseh Rav, says that what the Chafetz Chaim meant is that there's a Gemara Maseches Erim that says that when a person comes to daven, you have to have Yishev Adas. And the Gemara says if you are not able to obtain Yishev Adas, then you basically are exempt momentarily, because since the Ikar of Tefillah is Kavanah, without Kavanah, there's no purpose of davening. So the halachi is, and this is the way it's codified in Shulchan Aruch and Tzadi Ches, that therefore if a person davens a mokem she'ein bei kavana, or you daven in a situation where the Shah ain't bei kavana, a person, basically speaking, should not be mispalo. However, the Shulchan Aruch then continues, but idna b'bizman hazeh, since we don't have kavana anyway, even under normal circumstances, we shouldn't show a yura to be machmer, and therefore, even with a little lack of kavana, we should still go on to daven. So the Chazon Ish says that halacha l'masa, most women, bizman hazeh, at the time of bringing up special little children in the household, to say that they have tirif adas is an understatement. And therefore, if that's the case, what we can therefore do with the Chafetz Chaim Paskin is bishas hadechav gadol, which is this basically the situation over here, we could therefore rely not on the Shitas HaRamban and those who say she has to daven a formal tefillah of shachar simincha each and every day, but we could rely upon the Shita of the Magarim, who claimed that going back to the 14 and 1500s, women of even of the Ashkenazi community were no ghosts like the Shitas HaRambam to only say a bakasha in the morning and to be yotzei the chi of tefillah, because according to the Shitas HaRambam, women were never muchiyavas to say the formal din of a tefillah derabanan of shachar simincha. And therefore, since Bechlau, because of Yishev Adas, they don't have it and Kavan is lacking, this is what the Chafetz Chaim was semech upon during the childbearing years, to rely upon the din deraisa rather than being machmir on the din derabanan. So quite obviously, the same pesik who paskin that you have to daven this during college, the full tefillos of shachar simincha, when you're in a mitigating circumstance, being a mother trying to bring up children, you have a right to be semech on this kula, the same way the Chafetz Chaim's own wife was told by her husband, and later on the Chazon Ish was told his specific people who asked the shayla, you're allowed to rely upon this shita on shastracha. So I'm trying to point out, you have to sometimes teach talmidos not only what is the halach, but what is the yotzim in the cloud, that there shouldn't be a lack of shalom bias later on. Now, I also want to mention, what are the problems I see that happens continuously among students in our school, especially as the world starts to get righter and righter, and many of our students especially go to Eretz Yisrael, and inevitably, no matter where you go in Eretz Yisrael, you become a medektus mitzvos, and you come back, and quite obviously, you're going in a specific type of kivun. I find that, unfortunately, there develops in many, many households machlokas in between parents and children considering religious observance, where a child comes back from Eretz Yisrael, you become fachanyak, you're too from, you're doing this, you're doing that, I can't take it anymore, you're saying tehillim day and night, you become a human being, you know, you're not opening up a newspaper, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. You can't imagine how many stories pass my desk where parents react, and you can't imagine the violent reactions of some of the parents to what their children are doing. I can honestly say, on some circumstances I've been confronted in the last 12 years, the Mishnah at the end of Sota that says, Oyevecha b'nei beisecha, I have seen parents who are religious parents lock up their children in their house, saying that children have been brainwashed by a cult, and for that reason are not going to be exposed to society until they basically deprogram them. This is how far some parents have gone. And these are circumstances I had to literally, behind the scenes, try to take this situation out of these types of crisis situations with the help of the local Rav to try to basically deprogram the parents. They shouldn't think this way vis-a-vis their child. Now, quite obviously, if a parent tells a child to halach l'maaseh to violate the Issa deraisa, Issa derabanan, there the pasuk is very definitive. The pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, where the pasuk says, Ish im aviv tirav, v'shapsach tishmaru, and the Gemara Maseches Yevamah is tafei mebeis, and Sefer Paskins, kavodi, that the halach is kavodi kodmin, that the kavod of Hashem precedes the kavod of one's parents. So if a parent therefore tells a child to violate something which is Issa deraisa derabanan, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam Paskin, you don't have to listen to them. But the shaylas that I have is not dealing with that. The shaylas that I have are shaylas in Kodesh, where a child wants to do a certain type of mitzvah, a positive mitzvah, and the parents, for whatever reason, don't want the child to do it. And quite obviously, the shayla is, depending upon what mitzvah the child wants to do, should we advocate for the child or advocate for the parents? The two classical shaylas that come by my desk, one relates to the question that comes up each and every year, a child has a desire to want to learn in Eretz Yisrael, and to go to a seminary yeshiva in Eretz Israel, and the parent says, what's wrong with Stern College? What's wrong with Yeshiva University? it's Torah there, there's Torah there, why shouldn't you go abroad? And not only the first year, it's even more aggravating when it comes to the second year, where they've let him go 1 year, and now they want to go 2 years, and perhaps 3 years. And this becomes an aggravated situation. And halacha l'maaseh, there's a shaila. When a parent tells a child not to learn in Eretz Yisrael, who do you listen to, the parent or the child? So over here, interesting enough, it's not so simple. There was a requirement that this itself, these two shaylos, became major tshuvos of shaylos that existed during the time of the late Rishonim, early Achronim. Specifically, I'm referring to the Tumas Adeshin, who was in the 1400s, who had a tshuva mem, that's the number of the tshuva, if you want to look it up, which is Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch in Simon Reish Mem Sif Chafei, where the Shulchan Aruch has the following question in his specific context. A child wanted to go from his father's shtetl to another shtetl, and the reason he felt he wanted to go to the other shtetl, because he felt that in that shtetl there was a better Rebbe from which he would have a Simon Brach and learning. And the father was fearful, if he goes out of town, I'll always worry about him, I won't have any Menuchsa Nefesh, and besides that, there are Goyim there who I know are anti-Semites. And for that reason, you might be endangering yourself. So the Shaila was posted to Tumas Adeshin, does the parent have a right, because of Kibbutz, to tell his child, you shouldn't go there? The Psach Halacha is finally rendered by the Tumas Adeshin, is that since the concept of Talmud Torah is not necessarily universal when it comes to who can learn from. The Gemara says, Masechtas Erev in Daf Mem Zayin, that there was a special dispensation given for people to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, even though there's Tumas Am, even for Kohanim, because Shalom Ikodim Zerch Lumot, that even when it comes to the Rebbe, there's a concept of a Basherter, not only when it comes to a Shidduch, when it comes to a doctor, but the Gemara says, even when it comes to the Rebbe, some Rabbeim turn you on, other Rabbeim don't turn you on. So therefore, the Wamati Isa the Rabbanim of Tumas Am for Kohen to go there in order to learn by Rebbe in Chutz La'aretz. So what do we see? That a person is supposed to be allowed to learn in a place where he thinks he's going to have a better capabilities of accomplishing his spiritual desires. So based upon that specific makor, the Tumas Adeshin, Paskins, that as far as he's concerned, this case would be a case of a father telling a child not to do something spiritually beneficial to it, and therefore Allah would be the child doesn't have to listen to the parent. This is likewise codified by the Sefer Chasidim. In his specific context, it's not because he feels the Rebbe is better in the other location, but the girsa the Sefer Chasidim has, when they tear this habayis, he can't learn where he is. There's too much going on in his household, and therefore it's mavabal his moach. He has to go to the Makom Torah to have more meluchas nefesh in the other location. So even for negative reasons, he passes halach lamasa, a child would have a reason to go there for the sake of enhancing their lineage. When it comes to the concept of going to Eretz Yisrael for the purpose of learning Torah, there's a tshuva of the Maharam of Gutenberg, where he says very specifically, a pasuk halach lamasa, ein leben l'shmoyel la'aviv shemitzah shalolach l'Eretz Yisrael, because the halach is yeshiva Eretz Yisrael is a covered amakim supersedes that of covered avos. This pasuk halacha therefore tells us that as far as he's concerned, once again, kibbutz of aim can be superseded for the sake of wanting to go to live in Eretz Yisrael, even not to learn Torah, just merely to physically be there. When you have Tatila Tavusa, when a child wants to go to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael, surely bringing both of these poskim together, there's no question, halacha l'maaseh, according to the Shulchan Aruch, the child wins. I do want to mention to you that... Well, I can tell you, I've had cases like that. And I can tell you honestly, what has happened in certain circumstances, because the parents are unwilling to pay, is that there are certain organizations available who do give scholarships, and there are ways that these yeshivas allow the children to pay it off over a certain period of time. They themselves give scholarships, so we've been able to work it out with parents of very recalcitrant and unwilling to participate. But there have been ways somehow to either bashpi upon the parents or have facilitate them. I do want to mention all that most poskim are of the opinion that there's no difference between boys and girls when it comes to this, even though boys have a different qualitative dimension than the female counterparts. Nevertheless, as far as the poskim are concerned, the spiritual benefits that accrued by learning there in this type of environment supersede everything else, and therefore that is the matir. I want to go a little further. The next shaila I have, which is, I mean, relevant to a very important question that was posed before, and that is the question of shiduchim. The other major problem, and that is where parents want a child to marry somebody else than they are desirous of marrying. If the child says, I found my basherter, and how are you able to find your basherter this man has there? So you found the one you think is the basherter, and the parents say, I don't like this person. Does a parent have a right to prevent a child from marrying a specific type of spouse? Over here, there's a tshuva specifically of the Marik, which is quoted by the Ramon Shulchan Aruch. The Marik is in Simon Kuf Samach Vav, if you want to look it up. And in it, he says very definitively that since the Gemara says in Maseches Kedushin, even though on one hand, in Daf Lamed, the Gemara seems to portray that the chiyuv of marrying off one's child is something that's incumbent upon the father, is one of the tachanos of Chazal. Nevertheless, the Gemara says later on in Mem Aleph that Asa Adam Lisa Isha Ad Shirenu. A person is not allowed to marry somebody unless they've seen beforehand. And the Gemara's basic criteria over there is because how can you marry somebody who you don't love? Because later on, if you find that you don't love them, you'll have an unbelievable marriage with instability. And you'll end up hating them rather than loving them. So basically speaking, according to him, since by telling somebody to marry they don't want, you're causing a person to perhaps potentially come to Esav Sinis Yisrael, They're therefore telling ultimately the child to do something halakha that is improper, and therefore he passes halakha l'maisa. His father has no right to tell a child not to marry a spouse if they feel is correct. I want to mention to you that the Behuda says over here there's nothing between boys and girls. Both have the same leniency of this psak halakha. However, the Meshav Tava comes along with one provision, and that is b'medvam amurim, that the person you're marrying is not a bezoyin of the mishpacha. If the person you're marrying is literally a bezoyin of the mishpacha, then you're violating the isa of ara makla other v'imo, and in that case, you would have to basically have it adjudicated whether the parents are basically being biased, whether this is a bezoyin, because the halakha is a father can be mochel his kavod, a father cannot be mochel his bezoyin. I want to mention vis-a-vis shiduchim, another cute area that I have problems with, and that is, you'd be surprised what is the situation when it comes to finding a shidduch today. Perhaps in our generation it was a little easier, but today it's very difficult for modern boys and girls to find a proper mate. And everybody always comes to me during college and asks me, Rabbi, what is the magic formula? And I tell them there isn't any magic formula. However, I quote them one Tshuva Rav Moshe, where Rav Moshe basically shows you the sensitivity to this. There was once a boy and girl who wanted to have a test Shabbos, but they basically speaking decided to go to another Baal Bus's house and to tell them that they're still unmarried, to rent two rooms there, and to conduct a mock Shabbos to see if he would sing good to Zemira, so whether she would cook a good Lakshan kugel so there could be a proper shidduch. So they asked Rav Moshe Shaila, is this a Shaila of Yichud if the people know in the household they're not married? So Rav Moshe says, Alibet the halacha, there's no question in his mind, as long as the married couple know you're not married and they rent you two separate rooms, you can be there, there's no Shaila of Yichud. However, Rav Moshe says that even though you do have this type of nisayon, it's not going to help. You're going to be in your best behavior. She's going to be in her best behavior. She's going to use all her mother's recipes. And if that's the case, there's not going to be a guarantee this is going to survive afterwards. So Rav Moshe says, what is the final formula for good shidduch? So he says, the final formula is he gets four nekudos. One nekuda is mareha. You have to like the way the person looks. And you'd be surprised. You might take this for granted. I have students who told me they love somebody. So I said, what's the problem? I can't stay the way they look. So the first thing I tell them is there's a mitzvah. There's a halachic mitzvah. Ashiran, you have to look at the person to see you like the way the person looks. This is basic. But you can't imagine how the front girls today, they don't want to look at the boy they're going out with. So if the first thing you have to look at the person. You have to look at the person. Number two, Shmua Teva. You have to have a good reputation. You have to see how the person conducts himself in society. Number three, Mishpacha Tova. You have to live with the in-laws. And the fourth thing is Tumting Hashem Alakach. You have to have the Tachin. Because ultimately speaking, the Gemara compares it to Kriyas Yamsuf, and that means the same way somebody had to jump in over there, you have to jump in here over as well. Now, I'm almost finished. Just give me two more minutes. There is a Maimer Chazal. You would think that once they find the Shidduch, everything is wonderful and fine. But Chazal say Lek Ksub the Lomer Beitigra. There's always a Machlekes. So the next question you always have is, after they already have the wedding plan set, we have a major machlokas problem. What's the major machlokas? The mechitza problem. Where to put it, when to put it, how to put it. So I always tell them over here,
if to put it,
period, yes. So over here what I have is a very interesting phenomenon. This always causes a major machlokas in the mishpacha, which sometimes even breaks up shidduchim. Over here I tell them that the classical answer to you, especially the machlokas, is not so much by the question of the dancing floor. Many parents will be makel that on the dancing floor between the males and females, they can understand having mechitza to keep the crowds from coming together. But separate seating by the tables, your tantes and your uncles want to sit together. So this becomes the major machlokas. Over here I want to mention a psak halacha of Moshe Feinstein gave, a very famous psak halacha, that there's a basic difference between the chiv of a hafrada between men and women when it comes to public assemblages, where the assemblage is for the purpose of learning Torah when it comes to the concept of tefillah, and the concept of sitting together when it comes to sitting at a table. Rav Moshe is very, 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 very explicit. The chiv of hafrada between men and women, which he holds, is a chiv deraisa even with a mechitza. He's machmer to say that even in assemblages out of tefillah, just having a funeral together, having a what we call a public assemblage, a chagiga, for Rav Moshe will be a chiv of mechitza deraisa, he says. I want you to know that the Sri De'esh hold against Rav Moshe. Sri De'esh said the whole concept of din of mechitza, the chiv mechitza, is only from Shana to Kadmonios, a din of a basic Knesset. Outside of the basic Knesset, he feels the halakha is hafrada, and his proof is by Kabbalah's Pana, by Chassan, is you've never seen, most, at least in Lithuanian mishpachos, a concept of men and women having hafrada with mechitza during the time, even though the men and women next to each other. It's a din specifically in the basic Knesset. Rav Moshe's machmir when it comes to that. However, when it comes to fixed seating, Rav Moshe is very explicit that the paradigm from that is a din of a carbon pesach. The halachi is on the Karban Pesach, you had to have enough people to be nimmin on the Karban Pesach, everybody should eat it. It's inevitable, unless you had a big mishpacha with 12 children, that on the normal circumstance you would have multiple mishpachas with wives and husbands and children coming together. So you had basically a mixed table. The halacha is you couldn't make two a table with a mechitza in between, because the halacha would be kishtei chuk buburas, and the halacha is, Gemara says, meseklis sachem dasam of dalet, ein a pesach nechal b'shtei chaburas. So therefore, what do we see? The paradigm of the mitzvah, of the what we call the essence of a sudas mitzvah, eating a Karban Pesach, that there you have men and women at the same table, a fixed seating, with males and females of different types of mishpachas together without a sheila of halacha whatsoever. So the same emotion is machmir vis-a-vis mechitz when it comes to the dancing, when it comes to other public assemblages, who basically make when it comes to fixed seating. If anything, the irony should be, according to our emotion, there should be a chiv of a din of a mechitza by the smorgasbord, not by the seating of the tables. If anything, it's, the mufashim point out is pufla hefech. By the seating of the tables, there's a halapod of separate seating, and by the smorgasbord, it's mixed seating. But I'm pointing out to you is this, according to our emotion, once you tell them this and you basically diffuse them, this usually is able to resolve the problem. They usually have different tables for different types of people for different types of purposes. Now, I would say it's my last point, and then I'll open the floor to questions to both of us, is the Baal Tshuva syndrome. Now, I want to tell you honestly, Rabbi Yisai, Baruch Hashem, Chazal had forecast, and the Rambam records as Hilchos Tshuva, Sofi Selasos Tshuva, and we see today Baruch Hashem around the world, an unbelievable Baal Tshuva movement. And Baruch Hashem is still in college. I have a good number of students who are Baal Tshuvas, and there's no question they have a lot of questions, Halacha Masa, that deal with this specific new state of existence. One thing I want to mention to you, that in Stern College, we're very, very involved in Kirov Rechokim, both internally and externally. We encourage our students to be involved in NCSY, be involved in leadership seminars. We're very into making sure that they serve some type of functional role in the Kirov Rechokim Bizman Hazeh. And inevitably, if you get girls who come from an atmosphere where they've never been with boys together, and they're not going to become Madrichot in an NCSY, so the first question they ask me, Rabbi, is we're having boys and girls together, how in the world could I be Madrich in this type of Sviva? The second question they'll ask me is, they'll buy that. Good. We're now sitting at a Shabbos table together, and we're going to sing Zemiros together with the boys, and the girls sing Zemiros with the boys. How is this? What I've been taught my whole life, this is an Issa Deraisa, Kol B'Ish Erev. How can I do a thing like this? How can I be? So they want to be Madrichot, but the matzav of how the actual situation is taking place seems to run counter their religious experience. So what I always tell them is that, quite obviously, in Kol Chodesh Tachash Shemesh, if you go back to the Sri Deish, he was asked the famous question of the organization called Charles Oichel Chazer, and how in the world can they rely upon the children cooking for them kosher meat? How can they be neman? So Rav Moshe came up with a heter. Rav Moshe says that the din of eidach and bisurin, which is the Gemara Masechta Gittin, the base of my base, is a concept of umdina. That umdina, most people of Klal Yisrael have a cheskas kashris, and if they know the halacha is with the neman, that even without our knowledge, most probably they know the halacha of kashris, and they'll prepare food according to halacha. However, Rav Moshe says that's a din of eidus when it comes to nemanus. When it comes to what he calls kimle begave, if I know with certainty that my parents or my children will respect my wishes and won't do something against my will, and therefore be sensitive. If I want kosher, they'll make sure that I have kosher for my specific needs and will give me the separate implements, the separate foods that I desire, where it's a yediyah, not a question of umdana, a nemanus. Then in that case, the halacha is, based upon the Gemara Ksubis, he quotes, that halacha mice you can trust it. And therefore, he gave a psak halacha in that specific case. And he says, well, then, when it comes to our situation, we have the reverse situation, where the parents are not religious and the children are. If the child goes, the parents will not be mishaket to them. And therefore, kimle begave, that they'll be neman, and they'll trust my, and be sensitive to my specific desires, you could be semech on one's parents. And this is what we give to give children, go back for Pesach and Shabbos, and give them criteria on how to make sure the house is kosher enough for their specific purposes. But basically, there's much more we can speak about, but I want to open the floor now for a couple of minutes of questions and answers. All right.
Is the conclusion of this year by Rabbi Flum, and also by Rabbi Shear
for their most erudite